Hey, welcome to the Protectors. This is the big reveal. We are here talking to BC Sanders. Now, we talked about it a little bit. What we're going to reveal tonight is something, but it's not everything. Because you got to keep a little mystery. You know what I mean there, BC?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how many times we've been on a show together.
A few. Yeah, I would say four, five-ish, maybe.
Four or five, some of the live stuff, also all over the place. But we talk all the time, we text all the time. And, you know, BC, you're going through something that I just went through in March. 20-something years in law enforcement, and then you're pulling a plug, man. And I hate that word. I hate that word.
Sounds terrible.
Let's say you're going to pivot, my favorite word, pivot into a new phase of your life or a new chapter of your life.
You know what I'm doing? I'm giving up a seat for somebody else to take my spot and have as much fun as I had. That's the way I look at it.
You know, that's a damn good way to look at it. I don't know if anybody's going to, you know, with my seat wasn't, it was kind of like, you know, yeah, you don't want that seat, man. But anyway, but BC, man, like when you first decided to take that step and to leave law enforcement after how many years now, like 20 plus, right?
Yeah, this will basically be a 21 years. So I'm doing an early retirement.
21 years. And when you first decided to take it, you must have had like a hell of a lot of, like, you know, you still have bills to pay. You still have a lot of life left.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, what was that feeling like, man? Tell me.
It was like a gradual progression. The more I was writing and the more that was kind of taking off and avenues were opening up for me, the more I started seeing, okay, at some point I'm gonna have to either decide to go full bore and keep writing and push what I want to do next, or keep doing what I'm doing in the police world. But you know, here we do 30-year retirements or 25-year retirements, or you can buy back some military time and get time, you know, credit for that. So I just weighed out my options, but the more I was writing and the more I wanted to get into that, and the more I wanted to work on podcasting, merchandise, doing some events, I just thought now's the time where I can retire and actually get involved in doing what I want to do. So it's not like I hated law enforcement. I'm not frustrated with my department, especially not like my chief. I'm kind of sad in that fact that I'm retiring when we have a chief that is the old school crime fighter, but also forward thinking. So I am going to miss that. They're getting ready to take off in my department and get back to the way it was several years ago when we had a lot of really good units doing a lot of really good work.
Well, you were in a leadership position too, which is, it's a lot different. Now, you know, me, I missed the field. I missed the old days for me. Like the end of my career, it wasn't that fun. But knowing that you're going to turn the badge and gun it, the first thing is I'm going to try to make you cry during this interview. But no.
Oh, that's easy. You know what? That's all you got to do is mention like the movie Simon Birch or.
My gosh.
You know, the Stand By Me when Woody and what's his name? We're sitting there on the railroad track. Yeah. I'll tear up.
No, but I'm thinking about, like, you know, when you're turning in a badge and gun, I had a real tough time with it. I was actually planning on retiring in January. Then I postponed another couple months. And then I even thought about becoming a reserve cop. I even decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to go through the reserve program for DC Metro. Passed the PT test, was halfway, actually probably three quarters of the way through the hiring process. And I was like, you know what? I am 50 years old. I am not going to go back to another academy, even if it's a nighttime academy. But it was trying to keep my foot in the door. And I was like, do you have that feeling? You might get it, but do you have that kind of like, am I doing the right thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The idea, and we always say that, like, once you realize kind of you're done, you know, like your heart's not in it, it's not, because it's kind of cliche, but cop work is different than just a regular job. I mean, it's something that you kind of have to sacrifice going through that academy, you know, focusing on what you want to do and what assignments you want to take and what you're willing to sacrifice. You know, some assignments are very cush and you can sit at a desk and not do anything, or you're out there like you were on the border doing things on your own, you know, solo out in the desert or whatever, or as a patrol officer, you're in a patrol car, you're responding to chaos. And for me and for a lot of other people, that's what we wanted to do no matter what. I mean, I sacrificed a lot to do what I wanted to do. And I was very fortunate that a lot of assignments were open for me because I kind of built a background early on patrol with gangs and trying to be like an expert in just criminal culture. And some of that I knew before I joined the police department, just kind of growing up in the punk rock scene and stuff. But once I got on, I just kept learning and wanted to really just focus on any kind of organized crime or organized threat. And so that if your heart's not in it, and then like you were saying, you go and you apply or you look at it and go, you know, I still got it. Physically, you got it. Mentally, you would smoke everybody in the academy. But if your heart's not there after a while, you just kind of lose interest. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like going back to be that young guy again at 50 years old, to be the new guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can give me if I could find a reserve slot somewhere that was like, you know, fully sworn type reserve gig where I could actually do like investigations or do something, I'm like, I'd jump on a heartbeat. I'd give my time for free.
Now, some departments are going to like like you retire and then they'll hire retirees back if they've got certain backgrounds or they're willing to do certain jobs. And I think it's like 20 hours a week. But some departments look at like cold case investigators. So they may bring somebody back with a homicide background and they wouldn't go out and do actual interviews and work crime scenes, but they would go through cold cases, assess them, and then basically make a to-do list. And so there have been some agencies that I've met with and they've talked about that. Not for me, but I mean, like for me, when I retire, I'm not doing that, but for their units. And I thought that was pretty cool that someone could retire and still use that expertise and not tie up, you know, a full-time investigator. But
now you have a lot of creative outlet available. You know, you started the podcast a while ago. You've been interviewed a million times. You've been speaking out about your knowledge, your expertise and everything. And now you're getting into writing. You've been into writing. So you've been building up these outlets. And that's one thing I tell people. I'm like, When you're thinking about changing career paths, even if let's say you've only been on job 5 years, but you just know it's not right for you, or you know you did your time and you want to move on to something else, you're building these creative outlets while you're still in the job. You're not just staying stagnant.
Yeah, I think it's like anything, just having an exit strategy, whether it's getting a gang member out of a gang or a partner out of a abusive relationship, you know. There are just certain things you got to do to plan for that transition. Cause if you don't, then you're kind of sitting there one day, either retired or resigned, and you don't have anything lined up. And there are guys out there. I say guys, there are people out there who will wait and then they'll retire and they have no plan and they're scrambling around at the last minute, trying to get a gig or whatever. And for some departments, you can retire at 100%. So your salary is your salary for the rest of your life. So it always kind of amazes me. Some people will retire and they get very frustrated because they don't have anything lined up. And I kind of look at it and go, well, you've had 25 or 30 years, you know, to line stuff up and maybe not beat yourself up about it, retire and work in and ease into something. But like you've had stuff you've been working on, you've had, you know, outlets that are positive and that are rewarding for you and your personality. I look at the same way with newer officers and tell them all the time, like find a hobby, find something to get involved in outside of this whole police sphere, you know. So if whether it's, you know, reading, for me, it was reading and writing and doing graphic designs or having ideas for certain merchandise and stuff like that, or pitching ideas to bands and, you know, sharing artwork and stuff. You got to have something like that. But to transition out after 5 years or 7 years in police work, you have amazing skills that you can capitalize on. But what do we do in our culture? We don't like to see people resign early or leave. It's sad. It's almost like, people make fun of officers sometimes when they do resign, but then you see that officer a year later and they have a great job and they're happy. And it's like, it's, you know, like sometimes you just got to support people and go, look, if you want to resign and go do something else, like for me, like you got my blessing, like I keep in touch with me. I don't want you to go out there and be frustrated or mad. You know,
I look at it. I look at police work and emergency responders, first responders and stuff. It's kind of like it's almost like a military tour. You know, it's almost like an enlistment. You're serving. You may not be serving foreign. And we both know, like, a lot of people that go to war don't really do a ton.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of cops that have seen some stuff, man. You know, 4 or 5, yeah. 2 years, 1 year on a job, 6 months on a job. You yeah. know, give them the same credibility and give them the same kudos as, like, hey, you know what? You did 4 or 5 years. Go and do something that you want to do. It doesn't yeah. necessarily have to be like, you got to stay in this job 20 years or we're going to hate you.
But that is the culture sometimes.
I know, man. Yeah. It is.
I had a rookie. I used to be a training officer on patrol for a couple of years. And I had a rookie that was in the Marine Corps, served overseas. And when he came to our district was wide open at that time. We had one of the highest homicide rates in our city's history. And probably about 90% of those homicides were occurring right there in our area, our location. So he and I were going to a lot of murders and shootings. And he was only with me for 9 weeks. I think it was 8 weeks or something. And towards the end, he said, I've seen more dead bodies here than I saw over in Iraq or Afghanistan. I forget which one he was in. But I was like, okay. And a little, you know, psychologist in me was like, are you good with that? Like talk to me, you know, how's it making you feel? For him, a lot of it was, I say depressive, obviously, but I don't think he was ready for that. I think that he thought, because of the news and the city that we were in, it's a big city, but it's not, you know, New York, Chicago, or LA. And it took him a little bit to adapt to it, you know, and also, aside from the murders, you're also going to suicides, overdoses, deaths, you know, such child deaths, elderly people passing away and looking like, you know, they're discarded trash because, you know, they're sleeping in a cut between some houses or something. So it was kind of eye opener for him. And I always tried to remember that too, with, you know, newer officers to be very understanding that they're going to see stuff that, you know, TV and television kind of sensationalizes it. But at some point your brain has to process it, and it may not be that year. It may be 5 years down the road. For me, it started about 15 years ago because I worked on a homicide unit, as a detective, a sergeant, and as a lieutenant. And it started, like I said, it just started kind of setting in, and I started trying to limit what I was being exposed to. If I was not directly involved in something, I didn't want to see the crime scene photos. I had learned enough at that time. I didn't need to keep seeing it. And I didn't want to keep taking on the, I guess, the sorrow or the sad feelings coming from the families and that sort of thing. So I'll say this, if, you know, people are listening, they're in that field. If it's homicide, you know, aggravated assault, sexual assaults, like, at some point you have to switch it up and try to do something different. If that begins to affect you. Now, if it doesn't affect you, then that's cool. Drive on. And if your department has a psychologist, which I hope a lot of departments do, or at least will pay for officers or agents to go see a psychologist, you go in there, you talk it out, and it's not like sitting on a couch. You take a walk around the block or a building or something, or you can meet, like our psychologist department, you meet anywhere. I can call this person up, text this person, or just get on the phone and say, hey, if you got 10 minutes, I just want to talk about what I just saw and get it out. And it's amazing to be able to do that. So some departments are a little more progressive than others, and they are switching it up. So I'm excited to at least see that, and exercise and yoga and clean eating, and telling officers, you know, it's okay if you don't drink, and if you drink now, you can cut back some, you know, you don't. Like getting drunk every night is probably not going to help with what you're seeing. You know, it's going to make things worse.
You know, unfortunately, your department's an exception to the norm. And that's a big discussion we need to start having everywhere and everyone. you know, the military is finally embracing it. Now you're finally seeing people at the general level saying, hey, you know what? I have a problem. I have issues. Mm-hmm. I want to get help. But the way what you just described is something I think would be perfect. Like you said, you could reach out to, you could text, you could take walks, you could do other things. It shouldn't just be like, oh, man, come on, bro. We all see that. You know, come on. You know, the gallows humor and then deflect. And then especially if you're in a management position, you know.
Yeah, it's weird because when I got on the department, the older officers or the seasoned officers, we had a different psychologist, but we still had a department psychologist. But they just didn't seem to embrace it, you know. And it could have been the person. I don't know. I never went to that person at the time. So we had a different psychologist come on board, and that person was like top notch. So probably within the last 10 years, those of us that have kind of come up through the ranks and worked different assignments, we try to influence the others, make sure you're utilizing the department psychologist, and should get over that stigma that just because you go talk to a therapist doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. As a matter of fact, it's going to feel, you know, 10 times better. The same way a coach can show you how to dunk or shoot a layup or something, you know what I mean? Or throw a football. It's like, you're kind of dealing with the same thing.
And you're not broken, man. You're not.
This idea also that everyone has to talk about their feelings or what they're going through. Not everybody has to, you know, different people are wired different. And I know I'm taking this off on a tangent, but I don't necessarily have to talk about everything I see or what I'm processing. I can sometimes just process it mentally and move on. If I want to talk about it, I can talk about it. But I also know there are people that are hardwired a little bit differently, and they don't necessarily want to talk about it. And that's cool too. I mean, my main thing is just so that people have some kind of outlet, and that officers and agents and deputies just support one another and realize like some days are just not going to be as great as the other days. And psychologically, some people can't take that, the same way they can't take a person jumping out of a car during a traffic stop and threatening to kill them. You know, for some people, they may go into vapor lock, or they may just like, freeze up or do whatever. Most of the training nowadays is, you know, simunitions driven, scenario driven. You kind of find out early on in an academy, okay, at least on a scenario you can function, you know, in real life, maybe you won't, but the more you do the scenarios, maybe we can condition you to react a little more, in a reliable sense and not spazzing out the way we've seen some people do. And they resign, and that's okay. You know, maybe they just, that's not their thing. They don't want to put their life on the line. I fully understand that.
You know, when you bring up the outlets too, it's like you and I both started having an outlet a while ago with the podcasting and everything. Mm-hmm. Now, not everybody has to get podcasting or writing or whatever, but find something outside of the job. Because that's going to help you build to leave. You're going to leave eventually. You're not going to stay on a job eventually. And you're going to want to have something to back up. Mm-hmm. Let's take away all the monetary stuff. You still need to have some sort of outlet, some sort of mission.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that more, that's kind of more or more accepted now with newer officers coming in, because they're starting to hear that a lot more. But like when I first got on it, it doesn't seem like it was really that long ago until I stop and think about it. And I'm like, man, that's like the equivalent of me in high school and like whatever, like 1960 something, you know. And then I stop and go, there's a lot of time difference between, you know, mid 60s to the 90s or whatever. Like it's, and maybe my math is off there.
Let's not talk about time, man. You know, I still think 20 years ago, every time I see that meme, I still think it's true. I'm like, I still think 20 years ago is like the 80s.
Yeah. Oh, I do. I do it all the time like that. I completely forget about like the 2000s and 2010s and stuff. I'm just, I don't know. My brain's like stopped in the 90s until, you know, maybe the last 5 years.
I know. It was like, you know, I turned on the camera tonight. I'm like, holy crap, that's a lot of gray hair.
Oh, you're good though, man.
Yeah,
man,
we're going.
Yeah, I think that's the thing now, right? Is gray hair. Like
sure, man. I'll go with it.
People like gray.
So you're excited about this next chapter, which is good. And I'm glad you're coming on to talk about it. Now what do you think about it? Like, you know, you and I were talking about like, you know, let's not just do the writing and podcasting and stuff like that. Let's get together with people and let's just start building community.
Yeah. I mean, the writing thing is great. Consulting work. So starting to get into some consulting stuff. So my co-host on the podcast, The Disruptors, is Ski. And he and I've worked some assignments together, FBI task force, gang stuff. We've talked, you know, we have taught classes together. We're moving into a different phase where we're going to collaborate and do some more training here in the future. But doing consulting work like that, which actually kind of came out of left field for us. We went on Fieldcraft Survival, their podcast with Kevin Estella, and had a great time. And a listener reached out to us and said, "Hey, I like what you're talking about. I'd love for you to talk to my family. I've got some kids that are going off to college in different states. Can we just have like a Zoom meeting or something?" So we were able to do that and had a blast doing it, had a lot of really good feedback. And we just do it more like a discussion. It's not like a straightforward PowerPoint and, you know, throwing a knife hand and telling people how they got to do this and that. It's very laid back. It's just an open-ended discussion. And we covered everything from basically kind of hardening your vehicle for break-ins in apartment complexes or college campuses to reading a little bit of behavioral cues if someone's a threat or even if someone is trying to kind of pull one over on you or even just get information from you. So it was a great discussion. So we do things like that. And then we feel better because we're sharing our information in a similar fashion, the way we would on the street or maybe in a presentation to some citizens or stuff. So doing that and then trying to work some of these events. We've got some stuff coming up with Fieldcraft in December. So Fieldcraft has an office in North Carolina. So they're planning a Christmas party and still kind of in the weeds of how we're going to do it. But we're looking at maybe doing something like a Die Hard
movie
dress up kind of thing. Yeah, just kind of theme it. But want to bring people into their facility and talk, share information, just have a good time. And eventually, you know, do some more events. Ski and I'll probably start maybe booking some bands and trying to do some shows down the line, you know, a year or two from now. But I'm a social person. I love talking to people. And I think the more we can kind of do that and kind of reconnect, and not live in our bubble the way we kind of had to, you know, for the last maybe year or two, with restrictions and things like that. It's kind of like, we got to get back in society to sitting on a tailgate and telling stories or something, you know,
the knowledge transfer, man, the knowledge transfer.
Yeah. That's
That's one thing I liked about talking about Mike Glover too, was he, you know, talking about that community. It's not always about prepping and this and that. Sometimes it's just about talking. Having conversations. Cause we learn a ton.
Yeah. It's funny. You had him on your show, a couple weeks ago, maybe about a month back but yeah, great episode. The information there, I think people kind of get things twisted and they just start looking at it. And if you say anything about being prepared or learning about, you know, environment that could either be hostile or criminal or whatever, like people sort of get this stigma that you're now going to talk down to them or you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it gets a little weird. So I always try to tell people, like, I have a good time. I laugh and joke, you know, and I can teach you things that can save your life, but we can still enjoy the discussion and not have a big ego or anything like that. So I like those guys because they do that. They share this information and it can be everything from, you know, natural disasters to firearms training and stuff.
Not every day has to be like a doomsday. You know, it's like you could have fun. And you know me with like the shooting sports, man. It's just getting people into learning something new.
Yeah.
And the Fieldcraft stuff is so awesome, man. You and I both know, like, you know, getting out there in the woods and kind of, you know, I miss tracking. I miss because I grew up in Jersey, but the nice part, the Appalachian part.
You know, not like the exit city. 4 or something.
Oh my gosh. Not like the turnpike, the Garden State Parkway.
Okay.
You know, the Garden State Parkway is good for some things, man, but not like, you know, it's kind of a hellhole. Not gonna lie. You know, you stay away from Newark and all that. But I lived up by the Delaware Water Gap where it was just beautiful, man. Appalachians. You know, you get up hiking, you get out there in the woods, and you just kind of learn more about yourself. Like, you know, I want more people to do that stuff, and especially with their, you know, their kids, man. Get your kids out there and take a walk with them.
Yeah, they were just teaching a class last weekend on land navigation. And a lot of people would be like, well, I don't need to read a map. Well, okay, maybe you don't, but people were having a good time learning.
Hey, yeah, and you do.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a feeling of accomplishment, the same that maybe someone felt in school getting an A or, you know, winning some event in sports or doing whatever. It's like, you know, you could be whatever age, take the course and learn a really cool skill and then go out there and apply it. And just like you said, like nothing feels better than traversing a land navigation course and you actually succeed. Now, what's worse is when you get lost, and I've been lost before in the Army, and it's a
I was a butter bar. I was an infantry butter bar. I believe me, I know what it's like to get lost.
Yeah.
But no, that sense of accomplishment when you get from point A, when you get to point A, then you get to the next point, you're like, oh, I made it.
Yeah.
This is real. You can really do this.
Yeah. And it's funny too, the more we interact our brains, like we're really getting, like we're checking out from using our brains for anything. Like I'm kind of sounding silly, but really we have these devices that GPS that maps everything, tells you to turn left, turn right. Like you don't even have to write down the directions. Like when, you know,
10 you mean like ago, when we were kids and we had to do the MapQuest? Or no, like back when I used to work drugs, it was a Thomas guide, man.
Yeah.
You'd be like the Thomas guide and you'd be like, there was a GPS, you know, and you're.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a brand new officer and I was taking the city or the district map. And I was taking a piece of paper over it, and I was tracing the main avenues of approach, like our main roads, and where the hospital was, and, you know, because you got to know how to get to the hospital. And some of the other officers were like, you know, what are you doing, rookie? You know, and I'm like, I'm learning this route, you know, and they didn't understand what I was doing. But in my brain, I was a rookie, but I was drawing the map because I had to picture it in my brain because I knew when I got in the car, when the stress hits, I have to see that aerial view, like reading a map in the Army. Oh, I mean, and it worked. Yeah. It made it a lot easier. But yeah, I just tell people, like, get out and unplug. Man, I've spent most of the summer at the beach as much as I possibly can, enjoying life, you know, sitting with my lady, just, you know, sometimes we're sitting there listening to music. Sometimes we're just talking. We were out there the other night until probably midnight looking at the constellations, and it was the meteor shower. I forget what it's called, but every year in like mid-August.
It's called Independence Day, man. It's called Independence Day. We know UAPs. We had that show. Didn't we do that show together, the UAP show? I don't even know, man. I did remember that was something. It was like a live show, like about UAPs.
Oh, but legit, we saw like four shooting stars that night.
I'm sure they were shooting
stars. Sky was open, man. The waves were rolling in the background, but people got to do it, man. Get unplugged, get focused.
Okay. We talked. I saw Offspring over the weekend. Excellent show. What's your next show, man? What's the next concert coming up?
Oh, Cro-Mags.
Cro-Mags.
they are touring and they're hitting some shows in the South. So I'm going to a Cro-Mags show.
I might have to hit you up on that one, man. We'll talk offline about that. I might have to do that.
Yeah, DRI is coming through as well. I don't know if you remember Dirty Rotten Imbeciles, but they were like
thrash,
kind of punk, and then they crossed over like thrash. But man, they're touring and. Everyone is like, these bands they've still got it. Like they still bring that kind of energy. So those are the two shows coming up. I missed Gorilla Biscuits and H2O. They were touring together and there were no shows in the South. And I even reached out to the guitarist for H2O and he's like, yeah, we don't have anything on the books. I think maybe they're going to do a Florida festival, but yeah. So I've missed a few shows, unfortunately.
Yeah, I got to get out there, man. I have Jeep. We'll travel, man. I got my 2016 Jeep. I'll drive all over the place, man.
That's how I have to do it. I can't, you know, most shows that are in the South are going to be like in one state maybe. And there's like one venue that'll play some shows. So you hit that one quite a bit. But I call Sublime a couple weeks back, man. That was an incredible show. There were a couple other bands that played like Slightly Stupid, I think were the headliners, but I think a lot of people were there to see Sublime. It was a good show.
I've been trying to hit link up with John to go see Motley Crue and stuff and Def Leppard.
Oh, you talking about Silver Spear John?
Yeah, Silver Spear John. Because I'd love to see those guys. Yeah, that'd be so awesome. But I'm like, I missed them. I'd have to travel to Japan to see them. I'm like, I don't know if I'm up for like a day, like just a day on a plane just to see Motley Crue and them.
Yeah, he stays on the go, but he's back.
On the go, man.
Is he back to doing his shows, right? I think.
Yeah.
Got some shows coming out. Good.
Yeah, I hope so, man. Yeah. Well, brother, I appreciate you, man.
Yeah.
Looking forward to more collaboration.
Yeah. So you've got to look at the schedule. We're back to recording. So we got to put a day and time. I want to get you on our show and be able to talk and cut up and quiz you on some stuff, man.
So before we go, what's some advice you'd like to give to leadership? Listen, we all know, like, you know, a young person getting on a job or a younger person, you know, they're going to learn what they're going to learn. But if you were, and I hate that King for a Day thing, but what advice would you give leadership?
Yeah, it's pretty simple. I say it a lot. I joke a lot, but I can still walk into a room and brief FBI supervisor, you know, chief of police, sheriff. But I like to joke. And I would say for leadership, one, be approachable. It's okay to joke. If you have a sense of humor, if you don't, try to develop a little bit of one. To be more charismatic, mainly so that officers can relate. So the main thing is talk to your people, know who they are, know who your talent is in your upper echelon. So if you're chief and you're promoting people to these higher ranks, these district commanders or division commanders, know those people and know their weaknesses. Because I have seen a trend and it's, you know, multiple departments are doing it, but people are getting promoted oftentimes and they get kind of, they outpunt their coverage, so to speak. Like they just are not, they don't have that level of experience to be at that position. So that's what I would say. Leadership is got to be more approachable and be able to say, you are a captain, you are a lieutenant, a sergeant, handle your section, you know, and problem solve and don't be afraid to make a decision and go for it. You know, you're being promoted because the department believes that you know what you're doing, then go do that. Because an officer gets on scene, they start making decisions and they're telling people where to go and they're proning people out at gunpoint and they're putting handcuffs on and they're very good. They're very decisive, but sometimes up the chain, people get promoted and they don't have that strong background. So I would say that like keep your people motivated and put leadership where their expertise is. Don't give your buddy a pass and hook them up with that easy job or whatever assignment. Put people where they have their expertise and where they're going to make the most effective decisions and then implement them. It's really not that hard, but you got to have a spine and you got to have confidence in what you're doing. And I have seen people not have that confidence, and that's sad.
Be able to make a decision.
Yeah, it's not that hard.